Hello and welcome to PFF Fantasy Football Podcast, AFC Team Preview Editions. I'm your host, Ian Harditz, and joining me on this lovely, lovely Wednesday afternoon, as he always does, PFF's finest, Kevin Cole, host of the Unexpected Points Podcast, does a bunch of other cool shit on PFF.com. Kevin, what's going on, man?
I'm good. But let's face it. I mean, it's Geno's world. We're just living in it. We're just living in it right now. I mean, that game I'll give credit to the Detroit Lions for a season when scoring is down, passing is down. They're doing more offensively and defensively than any other team in the NFL to boost things back up, to get us some fantasy and some scoring goodness this season.
America's Lions, as I'm starting to call them. I know the whole Restore the Roar thing. Everyone was trying to say they were going to be this good football team, and maybe that hasn't come to fruition. But number one ranked scoring offense, number 32 ranked scoring defense. Are you not entertained? I know that I am. More on them, you know, in the next podcast, because we are talking all things AFC today. Awesome intro by both of us there. But guys, let's get right into it. As always, going through division by division. Going to quickly give, you know, an overview, more of a big kind of macro real life question about the team. Quickly get in their matchup, talk about any key fantasy takeaways, on to the next one. So thank you as always for tuning in. And with that, Kevin, we are on to the 3-1 Buffalo Bills, sitting atop the AFC East. Number 1 point differential in the NFL at plus 56. Do you agree with what the points say, that this is the best team in the NFL?
Yeah, no, I do. I mean, they were the best team in the NFL by the numbers to start the season. And if you look at implied market numbers, you look at the betting spread in the coming week, and then any sort of lines that we have in advance, they were telling you they were the best team all season long. And even the games that they've been close in, even the game that they lost, it wasn't like they were clearly blown out. They didn't look impressive both offensively and defensively. This is a really, really good team. They had a hard schedule to start, and I think they've filled all of our expectations.
Now, the interesting thing I have seen with the Bills so far, we'll see if it continues to persist this week against the Steelers, Buffalo, 14-point home favorites, game total at 47, is Josh Allen, man. They've neutered him a little bit, or maybe it's been, you know, a effort there, but career low, 7.1-yard average target depth. He's getting the ball out of his hands faster than ever. Look, it's still a top-five offense, but I kind of miss the Josh Allen, Kevin, that, you know, threw to a double-covered fullback 40 yards downfield in the playoff game without a second thought. Probably a good real-life thing, but do you think that, him kind of restraining himself a little bit, being a little bit more conservative, is that why we've been able to see someone like Devin Singletary just really start to give us a lot more fantasy production that maybe we were expecting? Because this isn't the same offense where Josh is just, you know, completely ignoring the checkdowns, completely ignoring the easy 10 yards right there for him. And accordingly, man, alongside a really, really, you know, robust snap rate that he's now had in back-to-back weeks, Devin Singletary looking more and more like a feature back who should be in the, you know, majority of fantasy lineups.
Yeah, I mean, can we trust him? I don't know. We probably had too many false starts on him in the past to say that. But we have hints from the offseason with the pursuit of J.D. McKissic and then spending the second round pick on Dalvin Cook that this was going to be part of what they do. It keeps Josh Allen a little bit healthier to get rid of the ball a bit quicker. And on the offensive line, it's not quite as solid as we have seen in the past. So I think those two things do play into it. Now, Gabe Davis, you know, let's talk everyone's favorite Rorschach test. When we look at what you think, when you look at Gabe Davis, I think we're seeing everything here. We're seeing, if you want to, you know, tout your Gabe Davis take and say he's been injured recently, which I think also lowers the ceiling on throwing the ball down the field because he's not looking as healthy. The weather conditions last week, I think that's true. At the same time, the guy probably isn't the target earning machine that you would hope going into this season. That will open things up, though. If he can play a little bit more, Isaiah McKenzie, you know, concussion, we'll see what ends up happening. I'm sure the concussions or protocol is going to get tightened up everywhere across the league. He's going to be playing more with Jameson Crowder down, so maybe they can get some more looks down the field. I think Josh Allen's not going to be like the lowest percentage of downfield passes that we've seen so far, but he may not be the highest either.
Second place, Miami Dolphins sitting at 3-1. This week, they're going to be in New York facing the Jets. Jets are going to be 3.5-point home dogs, game total at 44. What is your expected drop-off from Tua to Teddy, Kevin? We have heard, you know, Tua is going to be out at least this week. You would like to think they're going to, for once, be conservative about bringing him back. But just purely on field, looking ahead at week 5 now, Tua to Teddy, is it as big of a difference as maybe we're all making it out to be?
I think it is, in that my whole, like, Tua is 2017 Alex Smith thesis still requires a certain level of, you know, arm strength where maybe Teddy doesn't quite reach that threshold. The thing that you're going to hope for in this offense is the yards after catch. He can hit guys in stride. He can do that well. He can deliver the ball on time. So, no, I don't think it's a big drop-off, but let's not bury the lead here. Skylar Thompson is going to be active for the second straight week here. And as much as I love Teddy, I don't want to root against Teddy. I'm trying to square that with wanting to root for Skylar Thompson. So let me tell you, That guy could sling it down the field.
I saw that he was active last Thursday night. I added Kevin on Twitter and just immediately got like 10 concerned replies like, oh my God, can I not even start Teddy now? Which, you know, in hindsight probably would have been the right move. But yeah, just never tweet within 30 minutes of a football game unless you want to get barraged with about 20 million start sick questions. Not that there's anything wrong with sending those. You know, I will try to get to as many as possible. But with the Dolphins, look, Tyreek, Waddle, just the way they're able to design them touches, you know, those are still two guys that are going to be in your lineups, you know, whether Kevin or Tua or Teddy is going to be under center. What about these running backs though, Kevin? Because we only have two. Raheem Mostert is moving in the right direction. Last week, 73% of the snaps, 15 carries and 3 targets. I just don't think Chase Edmonds is necessarily going anywhere, and I wouldn't be surprised if this does swing back the other direction. So Edmonds, Mostert, like, again, it's just two guys that I never feel good about putting in the starting lineup. I see the usage with Mostert, but at the same time, I also don't necessarily see the Dolphins completely turning over this backfield to him anytime soon. Do you have an overall read on this backfield yet? Because it's been 4 weeks. I feel like we should know more about them by now.
Yeah, I mean, I guess my thing would be playing the Jets, whether it's Bridgewater or not at quarterback. Maybe that gives you a chance if the defense can really confuse and get some turnovers against Zach Wilson. Maybe that gives you a chance for a big Raheem Mostert game. I think maybe his ceiling is a little bit higher here, but you're right that Edmonds is going to be involved. We've seen him be involved near the goal line also for some touchdown opportunities. So it's limited. I guess if you have to play Mostert, if you have some injuries, if Javonte Williams, others were on your lineup, he might be a guy you can slide in this week, but don't expect big things from anyone in that backfield.
At the end of the day, it still is number two ranked offense in EPA per play. If we're getting double digit touches, you would like to think we're going to have, you know, bigger games down the stretch. Would help if Chase Edmonds isn't dropping, you know, layup touchdowns on the first drive of the game as well. Now, moving on to the New York Jets, as we just mentioned, again, facing the Dolphins at home, Miami favored by 3.5 with that 44 point game total. I enjoy the Zach Wilson experience, Kevin. I'm not saying it's always great, but the lows are pretty fun. Some of the incompletions he had last week, just the arm angles where he had to throw this ball out of bounds after, you know, making a horrendous decision to hold it for that long in the first place. Like you said last week, how Jameis just drives other coaches insane. I see like some parts of Jameis's play in Zach Wilson. Now, you know, both former top two overall picks. Wilson went second. Jameis went first, obviously. But Zach Wilson, man, what were your thoughts on seeing him in that first game? Because obviously, a rough part, but that's part of the experience. Came back, got the W. How are we feeling about Zach?
I mean, I think he's fine, but I never really bought fully like Trevor Lawrence's emergence this year, and I don't know if I'm ever really going to buy Zach Wilson's emergence either. I mean, he held the ball for 3.3 seconds, and it wasn't like he was scrambling constantly or something like that. He just holds the ball, and the Steelers have been particularly ineffective at getting pressure since TJ Watt went down week one. So he wasn't under a whole lot of pressure there. They've invested a lot though in that offense in terms of weapons, not a lot in terms of offensive line. They don't even know who's going to be the right tackle this week with Elijah Vera Tucker moving into left tackle. They got some issues there. So we'll see. Again, we'll see what happens because Miami's going to bring heat. They're going to have simulated pressure. They're going to have things to confuse Zach Wilson. So I'm not sold on Wilson yet, but he can provide, you know, some fun plays and a good driver to maybe a game. It's just going to be the question, can we get 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 good drives a game? I'm not sure if we're there yet.
That line of scrimmage really is going to decide things because if they can hold up those rushers and Zach can start targeting some of those aforementioned weapons, he's going to have some chances to put up some points, man. This year, the Dolphins, 30th in yards per attempt allowed, 20th and 28th in QB rating. Dead last in fantasy points per game allowed to quarterbacks and 28th against so wide receivers. So looking pretty good with the pass game options. I know last week I wanted to really get a game under our belt of seeing what this, you know, version of Zach Wilson looked like. And at a minimum, he looked healthy out there. Like that was my nightmare, Kevin, was a limited version of Zach Wilson who couldn't hold the ball for that long and, you know, was still trying to, but didn't have the mobility to make it happen. So still crowded. You know, Corey Davis has actually been the lead target getter when Zach Wilson has been under center, even though we just refuse to acknowledge Corey Davis, no matter what he does out there. But Elijah Moore, Garrett Wilson, I do think we can get back into that wide receiver three range, and you shouldn't feel too bad about starting them. Tyler Conklin, even too, you know, just continuing to outpace CJ Uzomah with all the routes. So don't be afraid to touch on him if you do need some tight end help. The interesting part, though, Kevin, was the Breece Hall takeover. Sure, it looks like we're here at this point, man. This was the first week that we saw him really outpace Michael Carter, and he looked pretty damn good too in it, man. A couple of missed opportunities. He did get the game-winning touchdown regardless, but at the end of the day, 67% snaps, 17 carries and 6 targets. Carter all the way down at 43%, 9 carries and 2 targets. So, hey, it's a good matchup, man, this week against Miami. We talked about the potential struggles and just real struggles they've had really at all three levels of the defense so far this year. Breece Hall, are we ready? Is it time? Top 12?
I don't know about top 12, but he's had some decent opportunities. He had a couple of drops. I mean, not egregious, but a couple of drops last week, which doesn't necessarily help that receiving portion.
Was that one downfield a drop? Because the all 22 guy got fooled by the play fake and I couldn't even get a good read on it. I was pissed, man.
Like I said, it was nothing egregious that did come into play. I guess for a lot of players, I wouldn't be ready to declare a positive trend of 1 week to mean something significant. But when it comes to rookies, I get a little bit more excited from what we've seen. So, yeah, I am buying it. And even if it doesn't happen next week, the week after, and so on, it is going to be time. The question is, like, can this offense produce that going forward? Can Zach Wilson sustain things? And that's still an open question.
This year, only Joe Mixon and Saquon Barkley more expected PPR points per game than Breece Hall. And a lot of that was Joe Flacco under center, just, you know, checking the ball down to his heart's desire in a bunch of games that the Jets were already losing by a lot. But still, man, 4 weeks now, Breece Hall, RB 23, 14, 14, and 16, without even having full control. So really are seeing the ceiling, you know, impossible floor that goes hand in hand with a talent like Breece Hall, who can do a little bit of everything out there for you. Final team in the AFC East, we got the 1-3 Patriots this week facing off against the aforementioned entertaining Detroit Lions. Lions are 3-point dogs, even though they are going to be, you know, far healthier than this banged up Patriots offense at the moment. Game total resting at 45.5. So we don't really know who's going to be under center right now, Kevin. We have Mac Jones dealing with the ankle injury. Brian Hoyer's in the concussion protocol. Everyone's favorite rookie now, Bailey Zappe, is going to be potentially the man, you know, leading them against the Lions league worst defense. So if it is Zappe under center, I know this is, I'm not expecting bad weather in New England. I haven't looked at the forecast just yet, but could you see a similar strategy to when they played the Bills in that snow game last year, where we're going to see like 10 total pass attempts? Because if we do, man, we got it down to two running backs. It feels weird to embrace anyone on this Patriots offense right now, but just based on the matchup, based on his potential run first strategy, like Damon Harrison and Ramondre Stevenson, could you see both guys, you know, kind of clearing that 20 touch mark this week?
Well, I mean, the key is going to be sustaining drives. Again, you like it if a team runs a lot for running back production. At the same time, you like getting near the end zone, and you like not having three and outs. I think Zappe is going to have a little bit more time here for preparation going into this week, but I'm not sold on him. They did put some training wheels on last week against Green Bay in a close game. What they will do this week will be a little bit interesting. I mean, Zappi's one of these guys where in college, he put up these astronomical numbers. Yeah. He was like a gunslinger with a little bit of a pop gun arm type of situation. And the fact that they took him before Sam Howell, which was a little borderline shocking in the NFL draft that they did take him there. So I think they'll turn him loose a little bit. I do not see a replay of that game just because of the conditions not being there, but it's going to depend really on whether or not they're able to control the game. If they can control things on the ground, they would love to do that, of course.
Sound like a good thought in my head, but when I was going through the rankings, I ultimately sided with what you're saying. I got Ramondre RB 26, Damian RB 27. I would play him ahead of, you know, whatever the hell is going on in Denver, Kareem Hunt, Zeke, James Robinson, guys like that. Still going to take, you know, some of these more better offenses, I think, though. Guys like Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Devin Singletary ahead of Stevenson and Harris, even if they might have a few more touches lined up for them. Let's move on to the AFC North now. The first place, Ravens at 2-2, because we got this, you know, three-way 2-2 tie going on right right now. But the Lamar Jackson show, man, Stephen Ruiz had an awesome article over at The Ringer last week where we just talked about the differences between 2019 and 2021 Lamar. And those are something that I touched on this podcast, but my angle was looking at the counting numbers and how Lamar was actually slightly outpacing what he did in 2019. Stephen looked at the percentage of total offense that Lamar was accounting for. And I want to say it was like 81% before last week, like something just ridiculous, man, in the pass and the run game. I mean, how much longer, Kevin, do you think Lamar can maintain this? Or like, has he more or less just been doing this for 5 years and let's just freaking embrace the overall QB1 fantasy football, Lamar Jackson?
Well, first I'll say in that Stephen Ruiz article, it was none other than your illustrious co-host.
I did see your tweet in there.
Tweet was in there with the 80% Lamar Jackson versus 65 in 2019. So as always, I want to credit myself first. Second, he can keep it up to a degree, but part of this is the fact that he was accounting for, I think it was 60, 65% of the rushing production for the team, on top of course, being involved in all of the passing production. That is probably not going to maintain itself. Now, they're bad at rushing the ball. And I know that J.K. Dobbins came in, everyone's, you know, high-fiving each other because of the fact that he got in the end zone a lot in this game. At the same time, 13 carries for 41 yards. So he wasn't exactly tearing things up. I think people are a little bit too encouraged by the fact that a running back is going to solve these issues, but you're just going to get fewer of the long, long runs that we've seen from Lamar Jackson. That's going to bring down his production a bit. And as much as you could say you like him being this dominant share of the offense, I'm going to go back a little bit to what I was saying, even when it came to the running backs for Buffalo. You still want to sustain drives. You still don't want every time they hand it off to a running back for it to be, you know, 2.5 yards in a cloud of dust, or that's not going to be good for moving the ball down the field, getting near the end zone, and getting more production for Lamar. So I did think what they've done so far was unsustainable, and you got a little bit of hint in that last game when they put up a goose egg in terms of points in the second half.
With J.K. Dobbins starting to look more and more like a must-start. I know he only had the 13 carries last week, but we do have Justice Hill now dealing with his hamstring injury. Many Greg Jennings impersonation last week where Justice suffered the hamstring injury mid-play and just hobbled his way, you know, for like 11 more yards downfield. So hopefully, you know, Justice can be back sooner rather than later. I believe Harbaugh said they don't believe it's going to be a super long-term issue because the guy's just been making the most out of his opportunity so far. You know, I know he was everyone's favorite sleeper back in the preseason of 2019, I believe, but with Dobbins not looking back to 6 yards per carry, J.K. Dobbins we saw as a rookie quite yet, but still getting those touchdowns. And at this point, there's no one left. We haven't gotten official word if, you know, Gus Edwards is going to be activated off the pup, but it would make sense if they kind of ease him back in just like they did Dobbins. So at least for this week, man, home 3-point favorites against the Bengals on Sunday Night Football. Got a nice little game total there at 48.5. J.K. Dobbins, someone that you're going to be forcing in the more lineups than not. For reference, I have him RB17. Like when I was looking at guys like Dobbins versus even Najee Harris and Khalil Herbert, at that point, man, just I think the usage is going to be similar enough where I'm fine gambling on the Ravens offense.
No, I know. I totally, in this sort of situation, as you mentioned, the rest of the backfield is muddled at best, what'll end up happening there. So I think I'm fine with that. And then when it comes to the receiver group, I mean, now we got some interesting questions because we'll get, you know, more and more details on Rashad Bateman. You didn't think it was that serious because he had his helmet on, but he never went back into the game in the second half. I've heard the dreaded mid-foot sprain type of talk out there. And, you know, that ends up being bad more than good sometimes there. And can we put like Devin Duvernay into life? Devin Duvernay, by the way, maybe taking the ranking for like most mispronounced or slowly pronounced names you're hearing when people are forced to talk about him now this week. I don't know. Maybe you can, because they really have no one else outside of Mark Andrews.
I mean, it's just the ongoing joke. It's like, how many Devin Duvernay is going to score like 20 touchdowns this year? And we're just going to rank him like wide receiver 58 going into next season. So yeah, if Bateman's out of the picture, look, it's going to be tough to get too high on him. We know wide receiver isn't quite like running back where we can just expect all the targets, which let's face it, it's not like Bateman was seeing double digit looks per game anyway to go over there. But you know, once we start looking at, you know, the Josh Reynolds, the George Pickens, the Michael Gallup range, I think that top 40 spot could be reasonable for Devin Duvernay, and he's going to be someone likely still available on plenty of waiver wires out there. So if you are in some of those deeper leagues, 3-4 flex spots out there, keep an eye on Devin Duvernay because, yeah, that Bateman injury not looking good for now. On the other side of the ball in that Sunday night matchup, we do have the Cincinnati Bengals back-to-back wins after everyone was ready to jump off, you know, the bandwagon following those two opening losses to Mitch Trubisky and the undefeated, of course, Cooper Rush. But over these last 2 weeks, Kevin, we've seen Joe Burrow only take 3 sacks after taking 13 in weeks 1 through 2. Is this really a change, or is this just life when you're not facing TJ Watt and Micah Parsons?
No, I think it's a little bit of both, right? That was a big thing when just tweeting off takes from my phone, just giving the sack count week by week. Everyone was jumping all over me. Goes like, it makes sense. They didn't play anyone who was any good, this and that. But it goes beyond that a little bit. I mean, some of this has to do with like the quality of pressures that you're going to have, that the pressures are not translating into sacks, but that's definitely part of it. And he was up around 25 to 30% of pressures were turning into sacks the first 2 weeks. Now it's been closer to 10%. It was under 10%. It was only 8% last week. So he's still taking pressure. He's still someone who wants to invite some of that pressure. You just have to be a little bit smarter with not taking the sack. So I do think there is some sustainability to what we're seeing there. And I think we have to turn to the backfield just because I want to tip of the cap to Joe Mixon because he's officially broken the expected fantasy points model. Maybe this isn't the way you'd want to do it. You probably want to break it the other direction rather than break it by having now significantly, we're talking 20 more expected fantasy points than any other running back this year. Yet he is way, way, way down in terms of scoring. And he's not even looking like a guy who could be an RB1 despite having the total just pure workload this season.
0-for-7 on touchdowns on attempts inside the 5-yard line this year. It's, you know, just to really add more context to that number, because it really is just incredible what we're seeing so far. Mixon this year has 24 expected PPR points per game. The next closest running back is Saquon Barkley at 18.3. That 24 number, that's what Christian McCaffrey had in 2020. I know he only played a couple games in 2020, but like that was regular Christian McCaffrey getting just this asinine workload that we wanted to chase. Unfortunately, we are not playing in expected PPR points leagues, Kevin. We are playing in real PPR points leagues, and Joe Mixon is only the RB16 in that. So isn't this where we want to follow that volume, though? Again, I don't feel like Joe Mixon fantasy managers are looking to like sell low on the guy. They see all the touches the dude's getting out there as well. This is PFF's 30th-ranked offensive line and team run blocking grade. With that said, we've watched Joe Mixon. He doesn't look good out there. He's not breaking a bunch of tackles, ripping off these explosive runs. So just a matter of time with Joe Mixon. I tend to think that this offense is too good for him to go much longer without at least getting some touchdowns. I mean, look, we saw Alvin Kamara and James Conner average 3.7 yards per carry last season, and nobody cared because they end up being good enough offenses where it didn't matter. I tend to think that's what's going to happen with Mixon.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I there could be some concern that the model is giving you some missed signals because of the fact that it's being driven by all of these touchdown opportunities and, you know, it converts or not and it's high variance. Yet if you go right now and you say, okay, expected receiving yards amongst running back, Joe Mixon is 4th in expected receiving yards. So it's not just touchdowns. Okay, it's not just touchdowns. If you go to expected rushing yards, so again, this is not something that's going to be blown out by all these carries inside of the 5-yard line. He is 2nd to Saquon Barkley in expected rushing yards this season. This is not a fluke that he has that high of an expected number. It is enhanced by the touchdowns. And I don't know, if you want to believe that running back talent disparity is not going to drive performance as much as other positions, I think you have to keep on sticking to this. But you know, maybe one of those situations where you're just a carcass left at the end, holding up your hand saying, but expected fantasy points at the end of the season with Joe Mixon in your lineup.
As the wife and kids get in their car and leave. But the expected fantasy points exactly. were there. I was following exactly. the model. But yes, to Kevin's point about the receptions, his previous career high was only 43 catches in a season. This year he's on pace for 72. Take away one game. Go ahead. We are still shattering that onto the 2-2 Cleveland Browns. Look, they had a nice stretch. Like, I mean, we talked about defenses to target in the first 4 weeks of the year. The Browns were one of them because you just looked at the 4 quarterbacks they were going to play. And, you know, seeing this start wasn't going to be that hard to wrap your mind around. Before their bye, though, they get the Chargers this week, who they're favored by 3 points in Cleveland, game total 47.5. And after the Chargers, they get the Patriots. Okay. Ravens and Bengals, though. Like, Kevin, there is a chance that this Browns team, we've seen a good offense, top 10 scoring offense. Jacoby Brissett has at least exceeded my expectations for him, and I would like to thank most others. they could be looking at, you know, a little run here of bad luck. Maybe they go in the bye 2-6, 3-5, something like that. Do you think this is a legit contender? Like, because we need to look at this in two parts. Once they have Deshaun Watson back and they're getting maybe top 10 quarterback play, that's what Watson has been throughout his career when he's been on the field. But do you think they can kind of keep the ship afloat enough in the meantime to actually have a chance to contend at the end of the year?
I don't know. I guess I'm a bit ambivalent on this because they have played well enough to win all four of these games. I mean, the Jets comeback was one of the most improbable comebacks. It's not just that win probability models are dead. It was just a very, very weird number. And you just wish that they would have been, from a team perspective, you know, 3-1 after these four games. They had the easiest schedule in the league, according to our power ranking numbers, and they are going to have the second most difficult schedule going forward. Now, you mentioned Chargers, Patriots. I don't know who knows about Mac Jones there, Ravens and Bengals. Yeah. But then even going further here, and remember, Deshaun Watson is not going to be back until they're facing off against Houston later this season. After that, Dolphins, Bills, Bucks. Okay. It's not good. And maybe I got to be, this is tough to do, but when it comes to Nick Chubb, maybe you could think about selling him at this point. It was tough to do until this point, but let's see. So far this season, he's been between 17. He's been a bottom of 17 carries, right? He has not gone below 17 carries. He did that 7 times last year. He had fewer than 17 carries, 6 times the year before. And he's had at least 22 carries in 2 of those games this season. He only did that a total of 3 times last year, and he never did that in 2020 at all. We're going to be playing in these schedules when you're facing against these quarterbacks. You're no longer facing Baker and Flacco and Trubisky and Marcus Mariota. You're going to have to pass in some of these games. And only 10 of his 81 fantasy points have come from receiving the season. He's not getting any of that receiving work. So I do think there is some issues with him. What you can get for him, I don't know. What you'd be comfortable, like, are you high-fiving yourself for getting Christian McCaffrey right now? I'm not sure, but maybe it is the right type of move to make.
He's on pace to score 21 touchdowns. And this is the struggle we kind of run into in the early part of the year. The Browns are 6th in scoring offense. Like, that's great. They run the ball well. Jacoby is doing what Jacoby is being asked to do. Do we really think the Browns are still going to be a top 6 scoring offense for the next 10 weeks of the season? I don't. I could see them being more of an average to below average unit. So then, will Nick Chubb's 21 touchdown pace stick? I don't really think it will. Is he going to start getting receptions? Not if Kareem Hunt gets hurt, and not even if Kareem Hunt, like, he needs two guys to get hurt. That's the worst part here, because we saw last year, even if Kareem Hunt leaves, there's not this super duper overall RB1 ceiling, even though he is right now. But you know what I mean? The 25 expected points per game sort of ceiling that a running back of Nick Chubb's talent, you would think he could get that 3-down workload. We didn't see that last year. 17.5 carries and targets per game with Kareem Hunt, 17.6 without. So they believe in Dearness enough on pass downs to unfortunately limit that. I am okay selling high on Nick Chubb, but you need to sell high. And this is something, you know, former co-host Ray McFarland like to, you know, say, especially after talking about someone not controversial like Nick Chubb, but just someone this good. Please, for the love of God, so high. It should be someone like Christian McCaffrey if you were going to take that bet. Yeah. You know, don't be sending me this Nick Chubb for a wide receiver too. He's been an RB1. He's been an upside RB1. Even without that, man, like we talked last week about how his expected points are better than they were like in past years. Like, he realistically, even if he wasn't outperforming everything and being the boss that he is, still probably expect him to be around a borderline RB1. So that's fine to have on your team. Similar sentiment with Clyde Edwards-Helaire. He's been a top 5 RB. I don't expect that to continue. His expected fantasy points say he should be a low-end RB2. That's not a bad guy to have on your team. But if someone wants to believe he's a top 5 running back, his production has said so far, that's when he can look to trade. Final thing on the Browns, we've seen back-to-back big weeks from David Njoku. Obviously, the really big one in week 3 on everyone's bench. Got the overall tight end 2 performance. Did come back next week with the tight end 11 call, though. Ceiling for Njoku once Deshaun Watson is back, though, Kevin. Like, is this going to be a legit top 5 tight end by the end of the season?
Yeah, I'm not going to go that far yet, although maybe my perception is shifting a little bit on him. I wasn't buying him after one big game. We are talking about 2 straight games right now of him having good production. Only 6 of his 71 career games have had more than 70 receiving yards, and the last two are part of that six that he's had so far. So, yeah, he's getting the usage. He's running over 80% of routes both of these games. He's going to be out there. I think it was in particular A.J. Terrell had a little bit of lockdown central going on for Amari Cooper, so that won't necessarily continue. So I'm not buying him as a top five guy. I'm buying him as a tight end one, as, you know, maybe 8, 9, 10, in that sort of range. You can count on him a little bit more than in the past, but I'm still a bit in wait-and-see mode on him.
Yeah, Amari got those clamps from A.J. Terrell last week, and now I am projecting him to get that shadow matchup from Asante Samuel Jr. this week. So, hey, Amari, he's a boomer bust wide receiver three. It's pretty much what he's been, even going back the last few years in Dallas. Don't expect that to change too much. Hey, we already got two booms this year. You should feel good about that. You're 1-3, Pittsburgh Steelers. They are now the Kenny Pickett show, Kevin. And they really couldn't have picked a worse time to kind of make that move just based on the upcoming schedule. I mean, we're talking about the Browns having, you know, a tough stretch. My goodness, before the Steelers week 9 bye, they're going to have to go into Buffalo, their home versus Tampa Bay. Sweet, good luck. In Miami, in Philly, and then they get their bye. I mean, this could be a freaking 1-7 team looking ahead to that week 9 bye. So before we kind of get to maybe some of the late season ramifications of that, what did you think about Kenny Pickett's first half of football? I thought it was fine. I agree with the Steelers sentiment that, you know, we shouldn't be, you know, doing the Kenny 3 Pickett jokes, you know, all over the place. But with that said, like, okay, we'll throw out the Hail Mary one. The two tip picks were still pretty bad decisions. Like, I'm not going to say those were, like, completely not his fault. But, hey, went out there, seemed to have, you know, I don't even want to say he looked better than Mitch, because Mitch actually didn't look terrible in the first half. I think he had worse games this year. But overall thoughts on Kenny Pickett?
No, I thought he looked good, honestly. I thought he was good, especially for the fact that we're talking about a guy who's coming in the second half, wasn't getting the starter reps. I mean, the worst time to start Kenny Pickett, it just starts with not having him in there for the first snap of the season. And then it continues to get worse as time was going on. You hear all these arguments. I'm sorry, this is rant time here. You hear all these arguments all season long about, oh, you can't put him in this situation because of this defense and this offensive line.
It's Justin Fields all over again from last year.
Yeah, and now you wait, and then you put him in the situation, as you mentioned, where things are not going to get any easy going forward. The positives for Kenny: looked mobile, looked like he can move around. I think he's proven in the preseason and now, he's not going to get two touchdowns rushing every week, but I think he's proven that he has functional mobility within the NFL. You know, he's not going to be Malik Willis, but he can move around a bit back there. The picks, as you mentioned, two of them were off of receivers' hands. The first one to Claypool was a little bit questionable, but I blame Claypool for being big and tall and not able to make contested catches. He fooled Kenny Pickett into thinking he didn't realize that Claypool actually doesn't know what he's doing when it comes to using that size that he has. And the third thing, and this is why we got to start getting excited here, is I feel a little bit of a connection with George Pickens, the Pickens to Pickett to Pickens, the pick to pick, whatever you want to call it here. It's blooming here, 70-something yards in the second half, and he was throwing it to him when he's not open, and I kind of think that is George Pickens' thing. Like, he doesn't get that open, honestly, but he can make great contested catches. So from now on, when you're chucking those things down the field, let's just make sure it's to George Pickens and not to Chase Claypool.
Lest we forget, you know, the offseason hype of George Pickens really started with that screenshot of him making this catch that he actually dropped, like, on his way to the ground, but it looked like really cool in the air, because America loves a contested catch, and, you know, why the hell not when someone like George Pickens getting it done. With that said, man, it seems like we're almost ready to anoint George Pickens over Deontay Johnson. Like, haven't we seen enough in the last 3 years to know Deontay should dominate the target share here moving forward? Now, we didn't in the second half. The pecking order was Pickens and Pat Freiermuth with 4 targets. The Jets defense got 3 targets. Claypool had 2. Deontay had 2. Zach Gentry had 1. So are you fine, I guess? Because look, if we're putting Pickens up into the wide receiver 3 range, okay, I see the talent. And if Claypool is going to take a little bit of a step back, I think that's fair. Where does that leave Deontay Johnson, though?
Yeah, I think he's fine. I wouldn't put him down at all. This is a rising tide lifts all boats type of situation is what you're hoping for here. And Deontay, you could say that you could be maybe more confident in his fundamental talent this season, yep, because of the fact that he's been playing outside so much more, and he's winning. I mean, he's winning. He's getting open playing outside. So he can show that. Maybe they'll even start to move him back inside and then just have Claypool, you know, running wind sprints on the outside, which may be his best role within this offense. So no, I'm not concerned. He's a baller. He's a great receiver. And you're hoping that you can get good performances out of him. And then also, more inconsistent good performances, I think, out of George Pickens going forward. You know, we want to be analysts here. I know it's good to take a half of football and extrapolate that out for the entire rest of the season for what target shares are going to be. But I'm very confident that Deontay Johnson is still going to be the leading receiver and leading fantasy producer of those wide receivers.
Yeah, Deontay last week about 2 inches away from having a 23-yard touchdown on a really nice pass from Mitch before he got benched. This week, though, Pittsburgh is going to be in Buffalo, 14-point favorites, game total at 47. I had a thought, Kevin, because I just talked about that stretch where the Steelers could, like, they're going to be favored to go 1-7 basically before their bye. And, hey, let's say some things go off the cuff after that. Like, look what happened last year. Like, look who was winning a bunch of fantasy championships down the stretch. It was Rashad Penny on a Seahawks team that didn't really care. He got back. And there's no need. I know Chris Carson had to retire. There's no real need to push him through it. We have Najee Harris, who is already not getting this sort of feature workload that we're used to seeing. That's why I bumped him down more so into mid-tier RB2 territory. He is no longer this 90%, never leaves the field guy. He's more 70% and still flirting with, you know, 18 to 20 combined carries and targets instead of 30. So hardly like he's not useful anymore, but he's already been dealing with this Liz Frank throughout training camp and then into the season. Week two, he was missing practice time. Couldn't you see like the 2-12 Steelers, like Najee still banged up saying, hey man, we'll see you next year. Let's turn over the offense to Jalen freaking Warren time. Because Kevin, in a week, like just the most week five ever, we're talking about Tyler Allgeier and Mike Boone and these committee backs who their team's running back that we care about already got hurt. And we're still looking at Mike Boone and Tyler Allgeier. I don't have them ranked in my top 30. I don't even think I have Allgeier in my top 40. And you can say that's wrong and whatever, and I'm not going to say I'm 100% right in the ranks, but you don't feel good about putting Tyler Allgeier on your flex. Meanwhile, we have Jalen Warren and Rashad White. We'll talk about him in the NFC pod. These are two guys that are one injury away from really just being every down workhorses. I think Jalen Warren, man, someone that's only owned like in 2% of ESPN leagues, even 8-man leagues, man, this dude needs to be on rosters.
No, I totally agree with you there. I mean, I'm a little bit more confident because of the draft capital that was put into Rashad White and the, you know, the talent level and the size and all those sorts of things. I'm a little more confident that he will be that guy. But you are correct. And when it comes to Harris, I don't think they'll shut him down or anything like that. This is Mike Tomlin we're talking about. He hasn't been in this situation, but he does not seem like the guy to, you know, pull up the tent poles and go home if they don't have a chance of being in the playoffs. I think he's still going to continue to play through the rest of the season. That would kind of go against everything that he's preaching. And even for Najee Harris so far this season, you know, his expected fantasy points, he hasn't been the guy. He would have been that guy, the Joe Mixon of last season, but better than Joe Mixon, but a Joe Mixon-ish sort of last season. This season, he's RB14 by expected points so far this year. We have to hope for him, and I think you can hopefully get a little bit of excited versus what we've seen is that, again, rising tide lifts all boats. Somehow this offense becomes a little bit more functional because you say, you know, RB2, I don't know, man. That was even getting tough to see that, to see how this offense was going to come together for him if Mitch Trubisky started and their schedule got a lot tougher.
I have him RB18. That really is, you know, halfway between RB2 and RB3 territories. One of those things, man, where I've just been so used to putting him around that low-end RB1 territory. I'm just like, him versus Jacobs. Him versus Jamal. You keep moving him down more and more and more. So, yeah, hey, if Kenny Pickett comes out there and shows us that the Steelers can be not a top 5 offense, but I don't know, a top 20 offense, then we can start getting behind Najee a lot more. Before we keep on going with the AFC South, what a give a couple shout outs to some of our lovely sponsors. No House Advantage is changing the game by offering the most dynamic fantasy sports platform available today. Play in pick 'em contests versus other people for the shot at winning 250K plus in cash. Download the app, choose a contest, select your player props, earn points for correct picks, and climb the leaderboard for your shot to win big money every day. You can also test your skills versus the house and 20 times your entry if you hit all your picks. Bet on up to 5 player prop over-unders or individual player matchups across every major sports league, including NFL, NBA, MLB, PGA, MMA, and NASCAR. Sign up now with promo code FANTASYPFF at nohouseadvantage.com or download the app on the App Store to get a first deposit match up to $25. Make sure to check out No House Advantage today and experience daily fantasy sports redefined, because it's not just how you play, but also where you play. You won't want to miss out on this. Also, shout out to Western Southern. The PFF Fantasy Football Podcast is sponsored by Western Southern Financial Group. While you focus on your roster moves, Western Southern helps advance your money moves. Buying your first home? I'm trying to. Planning to start a family? I'm trying. Wondering how to make your money grow? I'd love to. Western Southern's playbook of life insurance, investment, and retirement solutions helps you rest assured on game day. Team up to understand needs and address goals with a game plan built just for you. Get started now at westernsouthern.com/PFF. Your first place and now favored to win the division, AFC South Jaguars, 2-2. Step back last week. It was rainy. It was windy. Holy hell, that was horrific from Trevor Lawrence last week, Kevin. And you said it before, you were hesitant to kind of bump him up and say, oh, you know, look at all the bad things Urban Meyer did. Look at this, you know, 2-week stretch that Trevor Lawrence had in 2022. What did we see out of Lawrence last week? Because we had the four fumbles. Like, come on, man. You lost four fumbles in a single 60-minute football game. He missed Jamal Agnew for a potential touchdown. The one big play he had to Christian Kirk was so underthrown that that should have probably been a touchdown as well. Like, they're going up against the Texans this week as 3.5-point road favorites. I think this game's going to tell us a lot about whether just how real the Jaguars are.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we're going to be saying that about them every single week. So, like, week one, under pressure, struggled, kind of looked a little bit like rookie year Lawrence. The next 2 weeks, offense was playing well, defense was playing extremely well, no real scoring pressure, not too much actual pressure from the defensive line. Week three, weather, everything else comes into play. I mean, in his, there's good and bad. If he would have hit Jamal Agnew on that touchdown, they would have been up 21-0 in that game. And not that they would have won it, but that's a pretty good spot to be in, even if it's on the road against the Eagles. Number two, four fumbles. One of them was a snap exchange problem. The other one was a 4th-and-3 where the ball kind of just like slipped out of his hand. Yes, so that's on that side. Now on the bad side, the other two fumbles, lack of awareness. He had a guy coming right in from him who just, you know, Hassan Reddick, who just stripped it from him twice. And that's the little things that you see from him. And he said, it's not Daniel Jones level of lack of awareness, but you just want quarterbacks to have a little bit better feel, a little bit better accuracy on some of these things. You can't throw everything out, but maybe you can discount a little bit because of the weather. I just think it's going to be up or down for them. And, you know, 3.5-point favorites on the road sounds good, but then against the Texans, it doesn't sound quite as good. So, you know, markets aren't really believing in this team fully yet either.
Yeah, I think they're standing as like the new favorites to win this division is more so an indictment on the rest of the teams that we kind of expected to be doing better things than necessarily a sign that the Jaguars are fully back. And also shout out to the boat retirement, Blake Bortles. We will always remember you, Blake. True legend. That was a fun one to wake up to this morning, Kevin. You know, just I always, you know, got to scroll through whatever rap sheet Schefter and those guys have been saying. When I saw the Blake Bortles retirement, I started there with a smile on my face, you know, thinking back some of those memories and that one freaking random TV character in A Good Life. That is a pretty funny show. All right. With the Jaguars, though, in the backfield, James Robinson. He's back, man. Week two, week three, they're killing teams. James Robinson scoring long touchdowns. We see a game where, yeah, they were almost up 21-0, but then by the second half, they were all of a sudden back in comeback mode. And what happens? Travis Etienne winds up leading the way with snaps. Of course, you could not target James Robinson or Travis Etienne. We had to save those for design plays to Jamichael Hasty for some reason. But that aside, James Robinson versus Travis Etienne, do you think either guy is going to really be this consistent top 20 player? Or is it a situation where, okay, you can put him in the flex, we'll rank Robinson higher. Both guys are one injury away from being someone we really will care about.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely much more of the latter. You know, when you look at backfield situations like, I don't know, what's going on with the Cowboys maybe or others where you just really have to have a lot of points, a lot of opportunities, a lot of, you know, dump offs. A, you know, New Orleans Saints, maybe Drew Brees type of offense where you say we're going to get home on both of these guys and we can confidently rank them as RB2 types. I think that's the situation that we're going to see with them going forward. It was a weird game script game, though, right? Because they were up early, then they were down big for a pretty significant amount of time. So they're probably not going to be in that bad of a game script this week, but then they're going to be at the Colts, where the Colts have been great. You know, they beat them 20-0 already earlier this year. They're going to be against the Giants, not great. But then we start getting into Broncos, Raiders, Chiefs, Ravens. That's going to be the real tough stretch. I still think James Robinson has a good window for a few weeks, but once we get to those sorts of games, maybe it can flip over to Etienne being the guy. I just have difficulty with either of them having confidence in what they're going to do, because even a game they're supposed to win, the Jaguars might not win.
If there is kind of a profile of a running back to sell high on, I do think it tends to be these two running back situations where you can get a couple games in a row of the same game script. And that leads to guys like James Robinson just looking like their usage is a little bit better than it might actually be looking forward. So good points there. Go back to well with Christian Kirk. He unfortunately had to play a little bit more outside than we're used to seeing without Zay Jones in the picture. But The Zay Jones thing, he was questionable on Sunday, so hopefully it's not too long-term of an issue. And once Zay Jones is back, you know, we can really expect him to be actually a borderline wide receiver three, if not higher these days, especially in full PPR. That's where the passing game is going through. Christian Kirk, Zay Jones, all these other complimentary options, your Evan Ingrams of the world, you know, taking much more of a leap of faith. In second place, we got the 2-2 Tennessee Titans. So, Kevin, I love when you can watch the games, you can find these analytics to back up, you know, what we're actually seeing. What the hell is the point of doing either activity if you can't find a way to mesh those? And looking at EPA per play, I figured this one out just from watching it, where the Arizona Cardinals this year are dead last in EPA per play in the first half. They are number one in the second half. And right after I tweeted that, a bunch of Titans fans were saying, now do Tennessee. So I listened. I decided to do Tennessee. The Tennessee Titans this year are the third-ranked offense in EPA per play in the first half, dead last in the second half. Like, this is supposed to be, you would think, football guy terms. Okay, you get up in the second half. Now you give the ball to the big dog and Derrick Henry, you know, runs the Titans to a victory. Hasn't really been going that way. What are your thoughts on this Tennessee Titans offense where they just lost Treylon Burks now to turf toe? We'll see how long he's out, but really nobody has stepped up as a dynamic receiver. They have managed to, you know, get the record back up at 500, and they're two and a half point favorites in Washington this week. But do you think that their kind of middling offensive success is a fugazi? Because again, we do have 30 minutes of all these games now telling us that they're the worst offense in the league, but also 30 minutes telling us that they're best.
It's weird because their run blocking has not been that bad this year, but I don't think they've been blocking well, because I think we saw from Henry that he still has some juice playing there. Their passing game has been pretty good outside of the Bills game, where I don't think Tannehill really had much of a shot there. So he's actually adapting well. Treylon Burks not being there, I don't think it's a big deal. Seems like Robert Woods is coming a little bit back into form, so that'll be interesting. He can get that snap count back up to being more of an every down type of player. He could be someone you can play, but you know, outside of Henry and outside of Woods, the question is just going to be, are you going to get the consistency? And even if you're going to get the consistency from Derrick Henry, because I know people are going to point out the fact that 20% target share Derrick Henry the last 2 weeks. I mean, he ran 11 routes and he had two egregious drops also on those targets. Like, he's not good at catching the ball. He's good at turning around with the ball in his hands, turning around and running like in space. He's really, really good at that. Now, how often you can set that up for a running back, it's a little bit more difficult to scheme that than some people think. So I'm not buying Derrick Henry being a real receiving threat going forward. So I think for him, it's going to be, you know, up and down sorts of plays, but at least we're seeing that it's not about Derrick Henry. He is not washed. The foot does not seem to be an issue.
Yeah, that nullified touchdown should have been good from 22. It was a weird, like, downfield kind of hold on Treylon Burks. So this was really not one of those plays where, you know, like, he would have been tackled 5 yards.
Burks is a bonehead. We already talked about that. I mean, think that's a perfect example. Why do you need to do that? Like, okay,
There we go. So, yeah, anybody beyond Derrick Henry, I don't think we really need to be worried about too much. Robert Woods, okay, throw him in the wide receiver four discussion. Maybe get edgy and, you know, flirt with that top 36 line. But still, in this offense, there's Derrick Henry. There's everyone else. Dontrelle Hilliard, decent enough stash, but just realized Hassan Haskins would probably be coming in and splitting up the backfield. God forbid Henry missed some time. But yes, back-to-back RB2, RB7 performances from Henry. Good to see after our first 2 weeks where, you know, I'm sure a lot of people were pretty disappointed with that early season production. In third place, your 1-2-1 Indianapolis Colts. PFF passing grade this season, Kevin. Matt Ryan, 59.3. Carson Wentz, 58.8. This is not Carson Wentz playing well. This is Matt Ryan playing horrendous. And now Jonathan Taylor could be missing time with a high ankle sprain. We are recording this at 1:30 p.m. on Wednesday, so we'll see what happens there. But can this passing game take a step forward if they need to be leaned on more without Jonathan Taylor? Because it sure doesn't look like it based on the first four games we've seen.
Yeah, I mean, Matt Ryan wasn't as bad last week. The problem is we're talking about Mo Alie-Cox getting involved. We're talking about Michael Pittman on back-to-back plays being a few inches away from getting a touchdown in that game. So I still think Pittman is a good option. I think Ryan's starting to get accustomed a bit. It's weird to hear, you know, the veteran, and there was all this offseason hype, if you want to call that, about Matt Ryan and how great he looked. They were saying it was taking him a while to get used to what's going on there in the offense and to piece things together. So I think that could be good. Jonathan Taylor, we'll see what ends up with the injury situation.
He just got ruled out.
He just got ruled out. So you weren't going to be very happy starting him, even if he did play in that game in a limited fashion. So I do think Nyheim Hines is maybe a little bit interesting to see what can happen there. They're not afraid to use him around the goal line. He could be someone they're passing to a bit more with this type of offense on a short week in Denver this week. So, you know, I think Hines is like a maybe. Pittman is still a guy you got to start every week. Other than that, you're probably just it's just a pass on everyone else in that offense.
The Hines one is interesting. Nathan Yonk and I do our waiver wire show every Tuesday afternoon, and we were talking about him because the preseason usage, man, played 29 of 32 snaps with the starters in weeks one and two before resting alongside Jonathan Taylor in week three. We have seen four games historically where they did give Hines double digit carries out there. And man, eight career games with a snap rate north of 50%. He's averaged 6.3 catches in those games. So full PPR, man, like it's tough. Like, how would you value Nyheim Hines this week with Jonathan Taylor for sure out against guys like Damian Pierce and Jeff Wilson and Rashad Penny, who don't have the same catch upside necessarily, but they're also on offenses that maybe we're not necessarily expecting to put up 30 points each and every week, with all due respect to Geno Smith. Seahawks, of course. So Nyheim Hines, you think he's more of an RB3? Let's see how involved Philip Lindsay actually is. Or is he like a legit top 24 guy in full PPR that people should be getting behind? Because it's Thursday, you know, we got to make that decision here soon.
Yeah, I mean, maybe Penny would be one that I would consider. I guess I wouldn't. Pierce is starting to, you know, pick up a bit in his receiving work, so I would still lean him. And then Jeff Wilson is basically playing all the running back snaps. Now, he doesn't necessarily run a route on every single time they're throwing the ball, but it'd be really hard for him right now. So I would put him after those two guys, and I could go either way with Rashad Penny if you decide that unbelievable efficiency is going to continue. But if you're going to start, if you have him, you're going to start him this week. And otherwise, he's because like his stash potential, his what is their stash potential if you're not playing him when Jonathan Taylor is out?
That's about the spot I'm looking at. That's right on the RB2 borderline. I think I'd play him ahead of Devin Singletary, ahead of Clyde Edwards-Helaire, ahead of the Patriots running backs as well.
Yes, I like that. Yeah.
There we go. All right, Texans. Last place, 0-3-1. Is this the worst team in football, Kevin? We saw a little bit more from Davis Mills last week. Damian Pierce, you know, went untouched for 75 yards. But really, the one thing we've been able to embrace on this team is that Damian Pierce has been like, I don't know, a good running back. Pretty good. Pretty damn good. Sure. Go ahead. He's an early down back. The Texans look absolutely terrible. They have not made a single transaction in the last 2 years running to put them in a position to win games. Are we talking about a potential 0-16-1 Houston Texans team?
Yeah, I don't know about that, but I think they are the worst team in football. They are, according to like the market-derived numbers, the betting markets are the worst team in football, though. I don't know, man. The Bears give you run. I'd never count the Bears out. You cannot count the Bears out on being the worst team in football, even if they may have a little bit more upside than with Fields than what we're seeing in that running game with what we're seeing with the Texans. So, yeah, I'd say they're the worst team in football. So, again, that goes back to the Jags, right? Worst team in football, 3.5-point favorites. Probably not as much of an endorsement as you'd hope.
And again, Damian Pierce has been very good with his opportunities, but yes. The problem is that's just one third of kind of the puzzle. We want Damian Pierce to be really good at football. We also need this offensive environment to be better, and we need the offensive line to hopefully give him more running room. They did that last week. I mean, Pierce only had 21 yards before contact combined in weeks 1-3. Last week, he had 90 rushing yards before contact alone. With that said, they are going to be in Jacksonville this week as 3.5-point dogs, game total at 44.5. Damian Pierce is sitting as the RB19 expected PPR points per game. You did mention the receiving numbers. I think he had 6 catches for like 8 yards last week, like shout Jerome
PPR Bettis. Monster. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, just 68 rushing yards equivalent there. You know, nothing wrong with that PPR scoring, huh? Do you think that Pierce is a sell high? Because again, if you wiped out what we knew about Damian Pierce, if you just looked at him like, okay, we have a good running back in Houston that can see, you know, flirt with 20 combined carries and targets every single week. Like, I just think, again, it depends on who you're selling them to, but if someone really wants to be buying the hype, like, do you think Pierce like is ever going to be cracking the top 12? That's my question, because like, even if Rex Burkhead gets hurt, I still think someone like Dario Ogunbowale could come in and take some of the annoying pass down work. Overall, rest of season thoughts on Damian Pierce.
Yeah, I think there are some questions here. I mean, what I will say is that in the second half, when they were down big, when you look at the routes run there, then we had Burkhead with 10 and Pierce with 8. So he had more there in the second half than when you saw with them. There are going to be some games, could even be this week, where they're down big, and that'll be really, really a test to see whether or not Pierce can hang tough. What do you think his market value is, though, now? I just don't know that Houston's Texans offense is just really, really tough. So, yeah, if you can sell him for a good – you know, either lateral move or a combination. If you happen to have him as maybe your third or fourth running back that you drafted, although he was getting up there in drafts near the end of the season, then maybe you can do something like that. I'm just not sure you're going to get something better when how many running backs can we even count to have dominant early down work in the NFL? Not that many.
And I have him ranked RB21 this week. And yeah, you can, if you want to put him up a little higher, that'd be reasonable. So it's not like he's someone you need to get off your team and there's like a huge crash coming or anything like that. But it's your point about the hype and how ridiculous it was getting before week one with, you know, Adam Schefter and people just tweeting out, like, oh, Damian Pierce named the Houston Texans starting running back, and just kind of pushing aside just how horrendous this organization has been every step of the way. I mean, it's like they just have a free pass to do complete dumb shit every single week. I mean, Lovie Smith, you know, punting in week one, they're little dumbass pre-motion plays that they've been doing just to only run the ball up the middle. It's just like, because they have no plans on winning this year, they're given a free pass to lose like every game. So I would just, yeah, keep in mind that maybe someone is just buying the hype of Damian Pierce, where, again, with running backs, we know that just based on their volume, based on their offensive environment, that's why they're more replaceable than any other fantasy position. So if you can get Pierce for a legit upside wide receiver two, maybe even wide receiver one, I would try to make that move. Let's round things out with the AFC West. Your first place 3-1 Chiefs. Was that Patrick Mahomes' performance against Tampa Bay the most impressive performance you've seen this year, Kevin? Because I think it was to me.
I mean, that play was the most impressive play that I had seen. It's just that's what I talk about Lawrence a little bit, and the awareness, like the spatial awareness, just that almost sixth sense of things. The fact that Mahomes, he knows very far in advance whether or not he's going to be able to avoid the tackle. And that's what's just weird about him. I mean, he had Devin White coming for him on the sideline, and he not only was able to avoid the tackle, he was able to avoid it in such a way that he's totally free, basically. And then he was able to sense what else is going on. So, like, it's almost being able to look past the next thing that's going to happen to the thing after that and the thing after that, and already be able to just read and react on that first thing. Such a powerful combination. And that comes to play in his sack avoidance. That comes to play in everything else he's able to do and finding these wide open receivers, where the throw itself can sometimes be a bit off, but the ability to process all that information is just off the charts.
Speaking of those receivers this season, Travis Kelce, easy team high, 34 targets. Second place, Juju with 27, MVS with 23. Next up is Clyde Edwards-Helaire with 14. So unfortunately, still haven't really seen any of these wide receivers emerge as anything that you can fully rely on. I believe I have Juju Smith-Schuster down in the low end wide receiver three range. Wide receiver 36 overall. And even that, you know, I had to definitely, you know, think twice about if I wanted them that high. Marquez Valdes-Scantling, not someone we're relying on. How about Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who every fantasy analyst has told you every single day of their lives to sell high on this man? And okay, if you can, like, that's great, Kevin, but I don't know who's going to be giving you like this another RB1 for Clyde Edwards-Helaire. To be fair, he has been an RB1 this year. He scored a touchdown every 10.8 touches. And I guess my thing is, like, he still has low-end RB2 usage. Last year, Kevin, during this stretch, like, he wasn't getting any targets, and he was really like more of an RB3 in usage. So this still is the lead back in a high scoring offense, as we've seen them continue to be able to do even without Tyreek Hill. So, like, I don't know, is it just lame to be like, hold on Clyde Edwards-Helaire? Can we be the only fantasy football podcast in the world that says hold on Clyde Edwards-Helaire? Kevin, are you ready to make that jump?
No, you can be the only one who says you can be half of the only fantasy football podcast that has one person saying hold. Let's look at it here. So he is responsible for the two rushing touchdowns, three receiving touchdowns, right? Leading the team, as many receiving touchdowns as Travis Kelce. I mean, it's just not going to continue, right? He has 33% of the touchdowns on this team. And it's just weird. We've gotten to this point here where, remember when he was a rookie and then you had like Lewis Riddick and other people saying he should be first overall in your fantasy drafts? Yeah, don't stay in your lane, Lewis, please. so that happened. And now we have him being getting those sorts of opportunities on this Kansas City offense, and people are still very, very down on him. I think the problem is Pacheco, I think, looked good. You still have McKinnon in there. So, like, Edwards-Helaire has this in his ceiling outcome for a 3-5 game stretch. But to predict what he's going to do over the next 10, 12, 13 games, I don't know, man. I don't think we can hope for that much more probably than low RB2 sort of usage for him with sporadic touchdowns. So, can you trade for better than that? Go ahead and do so.
if you can trade for better than that, go ahead. Just don't completely give the guy away. But the one problem with this is that Clyde just, he doesn't really have anything fully to himself in this backfield. I mean, this was a game where Kansas City, again, blew out the Buccaneers, was never that close. I believe, you know, they had that 2-score lead pretty much the entire game. And yeah, Clyde had 19 carries, 56% snaps. Isaiah Pacheco had 11 carries. And Jerick McKinnon continues to factor in, not only on pass downs, man, they're fine using all these guys on the goal line. I mean, McKinnon had three different chances to score a touchdown last week. You know, he was wide open in the flat. Mahomes was rarely, you know, off target. He got stuffed on the 1 yard line. And then he had that underhand toss that only Mahomes does throughout the league. He got stuffed at the one. And who got the rushing touchdown? Not Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Noah Gray for some reason. So the Kansas City, like, in, have you seen a more weird, like unnecessarily weird offense inside the 5 yard line than Kansas City, Kevin? It's every single game they're doing something weird and different that doesn't really seem to work. Like the amount of quarterback snaps Travis Kelce's gotten to, like, have you ever dove into any of these numbers? It really is weird to watch on a week-to-week basis. How many times can I say weird in one sentence? But you know,
well,
what I mean.
When it works, it looks cool. So that's let's style factor, vibes is very, very high. Now I just think the amount of, think about the number one kind of offense, let's say, since Patrick Mahomes has been there in 2018, Kansas City Chiefs, how much time has been thought about this running back, that running back, Damian Williams, CEH, this, that. It's just nothing has been really worth holding for a substantial period of time. And maybe that'll just be the case going forward. Because I think this offense, when it's running at its best, it's not scoring rushing touchdowns with the running back, and it's not throwing passes to the running back if it's running at its highest form and function. And we have to just always remember that for this offense.
We have wasted a lot of time with that over the years. That's a good point. All right. In second place, somehow, the 2-2 Denver Broncos, still the 30th ranked scoring offense, and it's only going to get harder without the services of truly one of the best pure rushers of the football in the league, Javonte Williams, out for the season with all sorts of tears in his knee. Please get better soon, Javonte. We'll talk about the backfield in a second, Kevin, but what's your thoughts on this passing game now with Russ trying to cook? Now we don't have Javonte. It makes sense if they try to throw the ball even more than what they've been doing, and lost in that Raiders defeat last week where it didn't look good. Russ finally did have, you know, some stuff going in that passing game. We saw both Cortland Sutton and Jerry Jeudy find the end zone. And I believe, you know, KJ Hamler caught that deep ball, and there was another deep play, I believe, that might've had a DPI going on there. So overall thoughts on Russell Wilson's passing game, and did they kind of fix some things last week, or were they just playing the Raiders and, you know, probably should have even put up more numbers against that secondary?
Yeah. I mean, I think that they fixed things to a bit. I mean, I guess I was a little bit higher on what they were even coming into this game, and maybe some encouraging signs for Jerry Jeudy. I think, though, the most encouraging thing is you could see Jerry Jeudy finally do something. You could see, like, Kendall Hinton gets a couple of catches. You can see KJ Hamler, you know, he exists. He got a catch in this game. And you could still get 5 and 52 from Cortland Sutton. So I'm just still sticking with Cortland Sutton is the story for this team. And the backfield, my take is going to be maybe fade Mike Boone a little bit vis-a-vis some other guys. I guess I just can't get over looking at 78 career carries to, you know, 1,500 for Melvin Gordon and an additional almost 1,400 now for Latavius Murray. I know those guys may be washed, but coaches love washed running backs more than anyone else coming in. So I guess maybe I'd fade Boone a bit here. If anything, Gordon has the upside as being someone they turn to, hopefully won't continue his streak as being the most prolific fumble sixer in the NFL.
Not to say Melvin Gordon, they bring him back on they make him take less money. They don't even sign him until after the draft. They bring him back. He has 4 fumbles in the first 4 weeks of the season. And Javonte still couldn't crack a 50% snap rate. So what? Melvin or Mike Boone?
Veterans can get away with that. A rookie fumbles. Do you remember David Wilson back in the day? Oh, he fumbled and David then Wilson. Tom Coughlin, I think, literally tried to kill him after that. And his whole career went downhill. RIP, you know, the neck injury and everything there. But yeah, rookies can't get away with that. Second year guys, maybe. Veterans, if they're fumbling left and right, somehow they can get away with it.
I'll see David Wilson's name like once a year when I'm doing some like first round running back study in like April. And I was like, that sucks. But my point with the, you know, the fumbles and all that stuff, it's just like, again, Javonte fucking Williams couldn't get a full-time role in this offense with that happening behind him. Like, I don't see them giving a full-time role to Melvin. I don't see them giving a full-time role to Mike Boone. They just brought in Latavius. This is going to be a three-headed mess in a terrible offense right now. And it's tough to really see that getting a ton better right now. Nathaniel Hackett comes from Green Bay, where guess what? They've rotated running backs the entire time he was there. The Mike Boone waiver wire love this week was absolutely crazy to me, man. Like, okay, if you need someone that you're trying to get 10 carries or targets with, like this week and this week only, fine, man. But I still think Mike Boone, who, if Melvin Gordon gets hurt, which he already is a little bit banged up, who's to say that Mike Boone's even going to have the lead job? Who's to say they're not going to go sign?
I think there's a really good chance Latavius Murray is more active in this offense carrying the ball than Mike Boone is going forward. Some people like the way he falls forward. I don't know how to say he's tall, so maybe he falls really far forward when he falls. That must be the thing, because he seems to be. I mean, they brought him into Baltimore. He got some run there, you know, last season. It can happen.
Again, Thursday night game. They're going to be facing the Colts off in Denver, sitting as 3.5-point favorites. I do have Melvin Gordon ranked RB28 this week, but I do not feel good about it. I'm still going to be taking most start sit questions involving these Broncos running backs with the other guy. If you guys listen to this and you haven't had a chance to go on the waiver wire yet, again, Rashad White and Jaylen Warren over both Mike Boone and Tyler Allgeier 8 days of the week. Throw Brian Robinson in there already. These guys aren't just handcuffs. Like, Jaylen Warren and Rashad White are the three down handcuffs who all of a sudden are possibly like top 12 options once they get that job. Look what Mike Boone is right now. Look what Tyler Allgeier and Brian Robinson are going to be. They're not even in the top 24. Don't waste your time with that. Okay, here we got the Chargers sitting at 2-2. Kevin, Justin Herbert leads the NFL with 312.5 passing yards per game. He's on pace for 5,312 passing yards. Over under, is this passing game going to keep on keeping on?
I think it is. I mean, they're not a great running game. The defense, unfortunately, is not looking as good as it was. And the schedule is tough. Facing good offensive teams on the other side, they're going to have to keep on going here. And the volume that we're seeing here is a lot, too. I mean, Austin Eckler, the touchdowns, I'm not going to expect. The touchdowns that we saw last week, all of them were scored from outside of the 10-yard line. You're not necessarily going to see that, you know, three touchdowns being scored in that manner going forward. But the receptions is really what we're just, you know, licking our chops about when it comes to Eckler and the floor that that provides with this passing offense, where they're going to continue slinging it around.
Looking at the rest of that passing offense, still, you know, Keenan Allen day-to-day with his hamstring injury. Once he's back and healthy, you know you're starting him. And Mike Williams becomes a bit more of a boomer bust guy. But as we saw last week, keep Mike Williams in your freaking lineup. Live with the lows, because we know the highs are usually not too far away with Mike. The problem, man, is what to expect from these other guys. Because last week, John, on a purely route basis, number one was Mike Williams out there almost the whole time. Number two, DeAndre Carter. Number three, Gerald Everett, their tight end. We had Josh Palmer, which is 24 routes, because y'all get Michael Bandy involved, Kevin. Michael Bandy, whose name I literally did not know until Sunday night when I was reviewing this, is actively factoring into the passing game. And like, Herbert must love him, because the two like honey hole throws down the sideline that Herbert made to Bandy last week, like, were absolutely incredible pieces. Like, it's this new Jalen Guyton. You know, Herbert always saves his best throws for Jalen Guyton. I guess Michael Bandy took that torch. And hell, we even got something named Jason Moore getting a couple routes out there. Did that usage scare you enough where, like, Josh Palmer, someone that really has been giving us a lot of wide receiver 3 weeks when either Keenan Allen or Mike Williams missed time, right now, based on what we saw last week, just 1 week, but I think beyond Mike Williams, man, unfortunately, we have Mike Williams, Austin Eckler, and Gerald Everett. Probably got to fade the rest of these guys.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, just listen to how you said it there. Like, Josh Palmer is giving you wide receiver 3 weeks when someone is injured. That's not great, right? That's not the most useful type of player. So yeah, I think it's Allen, it's Williams, and then Gerald Everett. This guy is locked into your lineups right now. Yeah, he had a 225 week, but what tight end in the NFL is not gonna, you know, throw and mix in a 225 week in addition to having 5-6 catches and 50 plus yards in the other games? He's a stud. He's a stud at the tight end position, sad as it is to say.
This season, Gerald Everett, tight end 4, 8, 33, most recently 5. This has come with Donald Parham still out. I think he will be back, but we saw this last year. They're going to rotate tight ends a little more than we prefer, but still, last year, Jared Cook ended up with like 85 targets when it was all said and done. Gerald Everett well on his way, and as we're seeing, 2022, Gerald Everett far better at football than what Jared Cook was able to do in 2021. Final team here, ladies and mostly gentlemen, Raiders sitting at 1-3 in last place. They got that W over the Broncos though last week. With that said, the passing game has been struggling all season. I believe they haven't averaged even like 8 yards per attempt in a game yet. We got Devontae Adams, we got Darren Waller, Hunter Renfrow has been out, but Kevin, like, is this just kind of this passing game? Like, they're going to be a mediocre overall unit, or is this just four games in a new system with new players?
I think it's probably a little bit of both. Again, I just think the ceiling is a bit lower with Derek Carr than maybe some people were suspecting coming into that season. So that's going to be the problem. Yeah, once you get Renfro back in the mix, then it becomes, you know, even more of an issue there. I mean, we just got to talk Josh Jacobs, right? So How much mea culpas are going on here? Because we've talked about all these other guys, roles we could potentially get excited about. And Jacobs already has that, right? And he looks semi-effective, and he's been an above-at kind of expectation guy, which is probably all you can ask for when his expectation is RB6. So he's right below Jonathan Taylor as far as what you would have expected this season from his workload. I don't know. I guess I'm still not maybe as sold as some other people are. And I also think we're inside of this world, this fantasy world where everyone hates him, where I don't think your kind of normal fantasy football player had that much of a negative opinion on him. So therefore, you know, explore out there to see what you could trade him for. Some people may give you value as if he is a top five running back in the NFL.
He has been running like one. I mean, fourth in missed tackles, forced per carry, tied for seventh in yards after contact per rush. I believe only Christian McCaffrey and Nick Chubb actually have higher PFF rushing grades this year. So he's looking great. They've been more willing to throw him the ball a little bit, similar to kind of like Joe Mixon, where we're still going to see Brandon Bolden out there taking some of the obvious pass down stuff, just like Pirine does for Mixon. But hey, you look up, you know, last week, I mean, Jacobs still managed to get six targets in a game that they were mostly able to lead in. So no, I don't think he's going to play 89% of the snaps every single week, but this really is a two running back backfield. I know last week they brought in Zamir White for that, you know, funky fourth and one conversion or whatever, and he played like another snap at some point. But I was thinking this was going to be like New England Southwest, basically, like Jacob struggling to even get to like 50% of the snaps more weeks than not, and that really hasn't been the case. So I'm drinking the Kool-Aid for now. He's my RB13 on the week. You know, last week, I'm happy I already threw out the, you know, buy low on Josh Jacobs because we could kind of see this coming to an extent. Will he, you know, stay healthy and continue to be this efficient running the ball in an offense that, again, hasn't been that great, remains to be seen. But yeah, 89% snaps, 28 carries and six targets. McDaniels is willing to do it. I don't think we're wrong on Josh Jacobs. That's fine. Looking at the process, I don't think we were that out of line considering that they declined his fifth year option. You know, they seemed like they were showcasing him in the Hall of Fame game. So it is what it is. But right now, I think we're looking at, again, an upside RB2 at worst. He'll probably disappoint in games where the Raiders fall behind more than they did last week. But hey, man, Josh Jacobs and behind PFF's 29th ranked offensive line team run blocking grade. You know, great day to be great if you're Josh Jacobs. They're in Kansas City on Monday night this week. 7-point favorites for Kansas City, game total at 51. Chiefs blowout, Kevin. You got any thoughts on that Monday night game before we get out of here?
I mean, I think it could be very, relatively close. The Raiders are a decent team. I mean, they were, you know, the 0-3 start was not really indicative of how good they are. And I think for Jacobs, and I may have already discussed that here before, the problem with the Josh Jacobs offseason stuff wasn't that the take was wrong, that he was a limited ceiling-ish sort of guy. And maybe you could still say that's the case, right? Because high-end RB2, he's not going to get any higher than that. The problem was there was no, like, price sensitivity. It was just don't draft Josh Jacobs. And then he started falling, and then he was falling, and then he was falling. And then there was kind of like David Montgomery situation where there was no threshold. No one ever said, okay, this is when I'm going to actually start drafting him. That was probably more the issue than anything else.
That was the thing, you know, the fabled RB dead zone. I think at some point, certain people were just like, oh yeah, you don't draft running backs in rounds four through, you know, five or six. But it's like, well, hey, if the running backs you were drafting in round four last year are now available in round seven, like they're still not a RB dead zone. Now, you know, we've come back alive. We got the hand sticking out from the grave at that point. So anyway, that's going to wrap up this edition of the PFF Fantasy Football Podcast. Hope you guys have been enjoying the AFC, NFC previews as much as Kevin and I enjoy barking about them each and every week. So Kevin, what you got for the folks over at pff.com?
I mean, same stuff as usual: unexpected points podcast, quarterback ranking, showdown analysis, and then ceilings and stacks for DFS this week.
Great day, be great as always. I got my new and improved positional previews up there. Was going to town in Excel, Kevin. I figured out, you know, just one copy paste per team to get all my shit in there versus manually doing it. Just saving me all sorts of time that I probably could have done 5 years ago, but you know, better late than never. So check that out. You know, I was taking the easy way out a little bit first 4 weeks, but go check out that running back article in particular. I am proud of it, ladies and mostly gentlemen, once again. great day to be great as always. So for Kevin, I'm Ian. Thanks so much for tuning in to PFF Fantasy Football Podcast. Until next time, take care, everybody.